Attention Crusaders, you are now listening to Vox Arcana, a production of Holosuite Media. By the will of the immortal Emperor of Mankind, it has been decreed that the following broadcast of Vox Arcana may not be suitable for all ages. The views expressed on this Voxcast are solely those of the individual providing them and do not represent the opinion of this station, website, or any affiliated partner. Audience discretion is advised.
Attention on the battle fleet. This is Captain Ramaskos of the Imperial Star Cruiser Vox Arcona. Please listen carefully to the following announcement.
In accordance with the Codex Astartes, we hope that you have a productive trip to Arcona and arrive with the will to deliver the Emperor's judgment. Thank you.
Greetings, Crusaders. Welcome to Vox Arcona Mission 29, recording on Monday, March 7th, 2016, and coming to you from the Battlefleet Charon in the Segmentum Obscurus. I am Gigabyte, and I am pleased to share the Fleet's Vox Relay with Orkta. How are you doing today, man?
Hey, I'm good today. How are you?
Oh, not too bad, not too bad. Dealing with baby issues.
I had to deal with those as well, but I am the baby.
So you keeping people up all hours of the night?
No, I'm not.
Fair enough. Cool, so just to preempt, there hasn't been a massive amount going on with Eternal Crusade this week. Although what has been going on, we should be going into right now. So Into the Warp number 55 came out. We had Katie, Michael Chan, and Pierre hosting this week's, mainly because I think Brent and Nathan have been in Europe on a PC Gamer thing they're at, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there's a PC Gamer convention in London, I think.
Convention, that's the word I'm thinking of.
English is a tough language, don't worry.
I are English good, yeah.
Yeah.
So yes, Nathan and Brent have been at a convention, so we've had a few people standing in. Into the Warp 55 mainly focused around the new Fortress map that has come out on the Founders server. Just to start off, obviously, if anyone is on the Founders server, bearing in mind you are still under NDA, hence why I'm not going to be speaking much about this.
No, indeed, we can't actually say anything about it. Indeed. Apart from, well, yeah, we can't say any of our personal experiences, but obviously everybody knows it exists because they put it onto YouTube.
Yes, exactly. In terms of the Founders pack, the Founders server, sorry, the Captain's packs are being let in now. Hopefully the Sergeants and Warriors will be let in the following weeks, by the sound of it. Right now it's just the Captain's packs. They have, as I say, have a fortress map on there, which, by all accounts, according to Michael Chen, is about double the size of other maps like Black Bolt Defense Station and Torias Refinery. What do you think of what they showed off there, Octa?
Ooh. Okay, so actually, I, despite being a founder, have not been on the founder server. So anything I say, I'm going to preempt and say I'm only going by what I saw on the YouTube video. I really like it. I think it's showing, because let's be honest, at the moment, the game is just, you know, a standard lobby shooter, and that's it. And if you're not really into 40k, there's not much there that's going to grip you yet. However, I was actually quite excited by everything they showed in this this week's YouTube Into the Warp thing, because it really showed, like, actually, that fortress map especially. I was thinking, okay, yeah, you get 60 people in there. Think this could be a thing. This could be good.
Very true. It was very nice to finally see the fortress map, since they've been speaking about it for God knows how long. It's very nice to see it now. I thought it was quite interesting, Michael was saying that on the defence, each point has a number of lives, and if you respawn too many times, then you will remain permanently dead for the duration of that mission, and yeah. You go into a spectator mode.
So, yeah, I saw that as well, and I don't know if they said this, but is each spawn point has a number above it, and that is the number of spawns it can have before it depletes. Are those your spawns or your team's spawns?
From the way he was describing it, it sounds like it's your team's spawns.
Okay. Now, when I saw the video, again, maybe I'm misremembering, but I think each spawn point had around 30 spawns?
Yeah,
and that's that's one life each at each spawn. I assume that's still being looked at, if that's the case.
From what Michael Chan was talking about, it sounds like this map is designed for 60 on 60.
So it's not even one spawn each?
I don't know actually, because I think there was 4 points on that map.
Okay.
I'm trying to find the part of the video where it shows the map. But I think there was about 4 points on the map, if I remember correctly.
If that's the case, then yeah, you're getting one, depending on how it works, 2 spawns throughout the entire game. Now, the number of times I die in a game, that's going to be a really quick game.
Yeah. Well, you show, I'm looking at the map that they show in game now, in the video now, and they've got 3 points. A and B have got 33 lives, and what I presume is C has got 31 lives. I say presume because his big arrow that indicates who he is over the point. So I can't see the number on it, but that one's got 31 lives, so I presume each one has 33 lives.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, because 33 lives is way too many for one person.
Mm-hmm.
But that seems like almost nothing for the defenders.
That's right, it means you're going to have to be very careful.
Well, I don't know how you're going to do that, to be honest, if they're running these new Vindicator tanks at you. I mean, one lucky shot, and they've basically won.
Well, possibly. But then, I mean, bear in mind the fortress map, or the fortress, should I say, has a number of defense points, like defense lasers and guns and stuff built around it. Looking at the map there, they've got 4 on the front of it, and then 2 inside the fortress, and then 1 at the back. So there is a number of like defense points there that could help shield, shall we say, lesser players from being killed too often.
That's, I think, yeah, lesser players. That's a kind way of putting it. Yeah. Certainly, I'll be the first one in them. But yeah, no, that's a good point. There's the defensive stations. And yes, they also had this new feature in this map, which seems to only be in this map, which is you don't have to respawn, obviously, to change your loadout. You could just run to a station, change to what you need, get back in the fight, which I quite like.
I really love that idea. Stops you having that moment that we spoke about, I think, a couple of episodes back of, oh shit,
I've got to do
the Devastator one, damn it.
Exactly, you're like, all I need right now is a las cannon, then that Vindicator tank that's blowing down the doors, no issue, but all I've got is a bolt gun.
Precisely. And speaking of the Vindicator tank, hey, segues for the win.
Very nice, very nice, smooth.
The Vindicator was shown off in this video. It looks pretty awesome. It looks as what you'd expect it to look like. It looks like a Vindicator.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, a Vindicator, just like the Predator, is built on the Rhino chassis.
That's right.
It just has a big gun on the front.
A big gun indeed. A nice big mortar on the front.
Yes, yeah, I mean, the Vindicator is a great tank on the tabletop as well. If that's what you want. But it can deal out some damage. And obviously they've carried that over to the game as well.
Yes, indeedy. The recoil on the mortar is pretty awesome as well.
Yes, I thought that was a really nice touch, actually. Every time you fire, for anybody that hasn't seen the video, your tank actually recoils backwards.
Indeed. I can imagine that being a little bit fun.
I'm sure there's some way you could exploit it in some way.
I'm sure there's someone will come up with a way to exploit that, definitely.
Or, better yet, you're going to get some awesome double kills where you shoot and you hit something and your
and
recoil...
You roll back over yeah.
That should be an achievement, right?
Amazing. And the cooldown on the gun's pretty okay. It's a decent cooldown on the gun. So it means you can't spam it over and over again.
The cooldown was fine. But we don't know how many of these we're going to be able to spawn at once.
True.
You know, obviously if you've got five of these running up the center, everything dies. But equally, if there's only one on the fortress map, I mean, obviously that's, you're going to focus straight on that. So, going to be interesting to see how that balances out.
Well, that is a very good point. The amount that we can spawn at once is going to be a very, very important issue on that, I think.
Definitely. I mean, they're already playing around with it when it comes to the rhinos and the predators currently in the current maps. I mean, they've just recently upped all of the timers to try and avoid predator spam, I guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, still alpha. They're testing. It's fine.
Indeed. And I believe it was Christine came in later on in the show to speak about customizations and loadouts, which I'm liking the look of the customization screen, to be honest.
Yes, actually, I've got to agree. So, as I said last episode or the episode before, I don't like their current loadouts screen. I think it's a bit clunky, and I think it's quite restricting as well. Because the way it works is you have to go in and there are six standard loadouts, and you can also take in six custom loadouts. And from what I understand, not only have they streamlined the way everything looks and works, and also you're going to get, you know, as you change a cosmetic item, that changes on the little preview character as well, which is pretty standard functionality and should be in there. But also, you can create as many loadouts as you like, and you can choose which loadout to take into each map. For example, perhaps on the fortress map, you know that you never, ever use the bolt gun. You know, you're going to say, you know what, I don't even need that. Or, I never use the las cannon or the plasma gun. Or, you know, you can say, I'm not going to need that one, but maybe, because it's such a long distance thing and the Vindicator tanks are screwing me up, I've got to take my las cannon loadout, which I never take in on any other map. So I think that's a nice little touch. Yeah.
No, definitely.
Personally, though, I've got to say, I would prefer it if they just let us take all of the loadouts, but I understand why they don't.
No, that would be nice. To be able to have access to all of your loadouts at once would be nice. It's very representative of an army going into war, though. You know, you wouldn't be able to take everything with you in a realistic situation. And they are, as we've said before, they are trying to stay as close to law as possible. So I mean, it is very law appropriate. Shall we say?
I guess, but I mean, these things can always be, you know, fudged, if you will. There's a command rhino, there's a drop pod supply, you know. But yeah, I'm okay with it. It's mechanic, you know, that's fine.
In the same part they spoke about customizations, or character customizations, there was a little bit about talent trees there as well. Which was a little bit of a weird thing, I thought. I didn't think they'd go into talent trees in a game like this. But it is an MMO after all.
Really? I've got to say, much like I was saying, the New Fortress map is beginning to show the scale of what this game could be. I think the talent trees and the customization take it in exactly the same direction, and I think that's the direction it needs to go. And I like what they're doing with it as well.
No, definitely. And I think the idea, because there were a few people on the stream that were a little bit worried, shall we say, about the fact that you might get halfway down the talent tree progression to realise that, you know, oh, I didn't want to go down that way. But the whole idea is that you can pretty much gain all the abilities eventually on the talent trees, which is very nice.
Yes. No, I was... I think that's a good thing. Although, potentially... I mean, if that is the case, then there were actually no choices. There were no options. There's, you know, there's no choice to make. You're just grinding out, and eventually you will have everything. I'd almost prefer it if they did make a fork at some point, and you had to choose. You had to say, you know what? I'm loving the apothecary, so I'm going to boost my healing. Or I'm loving the jetpack, so I'm going to get one extra fuel cell, something like that. Just to give everyone a little bit more uniqueness?
Well, I mean, it depends on what route they choose to go down, because, I mean, listeners of this show will know that, or should know, that I used to be on a show called Beyond the Veil, which is about the game the Secret World. And in that game, the idea is that you can eventually gain all of the abilities in the game. However, you can only have a build of, I think, 7 or 8 abilities at once, or 7 or 8 active abilities and 7 or 8 passive abilities, and there are way, way more abilities to gain than that. So it's about building a particular set of abilities that work for you or work in a particular situation, and that I think would be an interesting way for the team to go. If they want to allow people to get all of the abilities on the trees, then customizing a build would be a very good idea.
Yeah, no, I hadn't thought of that. That would be quite cool, because then your talents, or whatever they're going to call it in the end, but, you know, your talents could be brought into each map differently, much like your weapon loadouts. So, you know you're going into the fortress map, so you take, I don't know, Howl of the Wolf, which makes everyone around you run faster. Who knows what they're going to do? That I made that up. Don't quote me. But, you know, something like that could be pretty cool.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And the other thing they said about that is it's going to be each different sub-faction has a talent tree, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Blood Angels get their own, Space Wolves get their own, Dark Angels and Ultramarines, right?
Yep, that's right.
So I think that's okay as well, because presumably it means that picking your faction will actually have an effect on your end game.
No, that's right. It is nice to see them going down that road and actually making your faction choice, or sub-faction choice in this case, actually matter rather than just it being like a colour choice, you know?
Yes, definitely. I mean, because obviously Games Workshop is giving all of these factions, you know, character and uniqueness, and I think it's really good that they're bringing that over.
Definitely. And that was about it for Into the Warp 55. Obviously, they had a few other bits and pieces going on. We'll certainly go over to the YouTube channel and give it a watch. Moving on to the world of 40k, over on the main Games Workshop site. There's a lot going on with fantasy right now. However, in general, they're kind of running this Win the Army of Your Dreams competition thing.
Yes, and have they suckered you in? Have you bought it?
No, I don't have any money.
Okay. That's a fair excuse. I've got to say, they kind of got me a little bit. I may possibly, I mean, don't check my bank account or anything, but I may possibly have ordered three different orders of £50 each, so that I have three entries. I mean,
so you have three entries, yeah.
Yeah. Whoops.
So yes, if you didn't catch on from that, you basically need to place an order of £50 or more, either through the web store directly or through an in-store order point in any Games Workshop or Warhammer retail store, and you'll be entered into a draw. Each order of £50 or more, as Orkta mentioned there, gets you one entry into that draw. And you will hopefully win the army of your dreams. There are currently seven prizes to be won. One is what they call a hobby bundle, which is basically a fixed bundle of a number of products. One second. Loading it up now. There it is. So that is green stuff, project box, palette pad, fine detail cutters, a Citadel scripting tool set, a sculpting tool set, sorry, when I could speak properly, a drill, a file set, mold line remover, cutting mat, liquid green stuff, the how to paint Citadel miniatures guide, the paintbrush set, and one of every paint. Wow. That's mental.
Oh yeah, I mean that on its own is worth, you know, that's a decent prize. Only because of how much Games Workshop charges you for that stuff anyway.
Definitely, indeed. So that's included in all the prizes, as are a choice of one of two scenery bundles, one for fantasy and one for 40k. Warhammer Age of Sigmar scenery set, or a Realm of Battle Ultima Quadrant scenery set thing. So you get to choose one of those two. Obviously, if you're into 40k, it'll be the Ultima Quadrant one.
And again, decent sized terrain sets as well. You know, it's not like here's one small thing.
No,
it's,
definitely.
It's like it's effectively almost all of the terrain they do, either for Age of Sigmar or for 40k. You know, one of each box, kind of.
That's right. Obviously, your choice of miniatures on GamesWorkshop.com, totaling no more than 2,000 Great British Pounds.
Now, obviously, that is the army of your dreams. I mean, that's probably at least four models, so that's pretty good. But the real question I have is, probably not, I guess if it says... If the way they've worded it is gamesworkshop.com, then yeah, okay. I was almost hoping that the £2,000 could be extended to Forge World, because obviously they do have the Forge World tab on the Games Workshop site.
That's pushing it.
Yeah, I think it will be, because I think what happens is you click the Forge World tab and it takes you to ForgeWorld.com. So you actually do leave gamesworkshop.com. Which sucks a bit.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a sucky thing, but also excluded from the promotion, obviously, Lord of the Rings and Hobbit products. Realm of Battle is excluded, except for obviously the scenery set that they're giving away. White Dwarf, Warhammer Visions, and all digital products and virtual gift vouchers and hobby supplies. So those aren't included in that choice. So basically, your fantasy or 40k.
Which I think's fair. I mean, you know, that's not their main stuff. That's not what they're pushing. So I don't think many people are going to be not entering because of that.
No, I doubt it. But it's a very nice competition nonetheless. It's not something that you often see from Games Workshop, is this kind of giveaway.
No, and that's because they have bad business sense, to be honest. Yeah. No, so as I said, obviously I've entered three times, so I'm expecting to win zero times, if my maths is correct on that. The only slight issue, and you know, this isn't Games Workshop specific, this is any company, but this is a closed raffle. They are just at some point going to say, okay, this person won. And... if one is cynical and paranoid and looks around on the internet enough, then you can find talk that a lot of Games Workshop and Black Library tends to be kind of a boys' club, if you will. As in, you know, not boys, but they, I'm pretty sure whoever wins this is going to be related in some way to somebody that works at the company. or is a mate.
You cynical thing.
Well, don't get me wrong, I vaguely know some Games Workshop employees, like I've seen them in the stores, so I'm kind of hoping that's going to be me. And if it is me, obviously I will eat my words, along with my £2,000 of Necrons. Again, there's no proof to that, but it's a closed draw, so anything could happen.
So yes, the draw comes to an end on April 6th. So get your orders in before then, and you should maybe end with a chance to win the army of your dreams. It would be very good. And the winners will be announced online on the 9th of May.
I'm very much looking forward to seeing my own name up there.
Keep your fingers crossed for Orpta there, yes.
I am, and I will take anybody's prayers, well wishes, satanic sacrifices, it's all good with me.
Sacrifices to the Chaos Gods, yeah?
Well, preferably, yeah.
Yes, and over on Forge World, they're also running a competition. However, this time it is to win a Titan. They're giving the chance to win a one of two Warhound Titans, a Reaver Titan, or a Warlord Titan, which is very nice indeed.
I was less excited by this. Because I don't need a Titan, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing about it is that you have to put down an order for £100 or more.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's literally double the entry price. And I don't know what the actual monetary value of a full Titan is, but it's probably not more than the roughly 2,750, I guess, that you'd be winning from GW.
Yeah, I don't think it's worth quite that much, to be honest.
Close, possibly. But
very possibly. A Warlord Titan is worth £1,240.
Okay. That is, of course, a ridiculous amount of money for what you get. But, I don't know. I've never been a big fan of Forge World. As in, I like what they do, but I've never bought anything.
Yeah, I can't afford anything they do, unfortunately.
Okay, yeah. That is also the case. I cannot afford it.
But also, in addition to making a £100 or more purchase from Forge World, you also need to email them with the answers to the following two questions. Choose a name for your Titan, and in 400 words or less, tell us how your Titan earned its glorious and infamous name.
Oh yes, I remember this. So when I first read this email that I got, this notification of a competition thing, I thought it was just that. I thought you just had to email them. And I was like, nice, that's pretty good. That's pretty good, you know? Because generally, I do think of Forge World as being kind of better than Games Workshop. And I was like, they're doing it with the prizes and competitions as well. But no, £100 entry on top of that.
No, they do generally tend to be a lot nicer than the main GW site.
Yes, yeah. I mean, even when it comes to, you know, the tabletop, as in they will actually update rules, which GW is somewhat slack on, shall we say.
Just a bit. Also on the Forge World site, I don't know if you noticed this, there is a a new thing that they've got on there called a Mechanicum Domitar Battle Automata. Which is quite nice.
Yeah, so obviously that's 30k. Mm-hmm. Because Mechanicum is 30k and Mechanicus is 40k.
40k, yes, indeed.
And luckily, and I've got to say, I am doing a brilliant job of saving myself money. I have no interest in playing 30k. So, well done me. And actually, I'm not, so GW recently released the Skitarii, or as some people call it, the Skitarii, but it's clearly Skitarii.
Yeah, it's a weird way people say that.
It's just two eyes. It's not Skitarii. Anyway. And I really like some of their models. However, they do have similar looking, I don't know what they're called, but you know, they are automatons. Mm. Dreadnought style things. And I don't like those. But I do like the normal rank and file troops. And this Fourth World thing is in the same style as those Dreadnought type things from the Mechanicus.
That's right.
And, yeah. I'd be quite happy to never see that ever again.
I do like it. I think it looks very similar to like the old Golden Age of Cinema type, you know, robots that they used to have and things like that. You know, danger, Will Robinson, danger. That sort of stuff.
Yeah, I can see that. I think, for me, my instant thought was it kind of reminds me of a diving suit. much like the Big Brothers from Bioshock.
It looks like the Big Daddies from Bioshock.
Big Daddies, that's it, yeah. I mean, yeah, they're okay, but they're just... nah.
Fair enough. And just to add on to the Winter Titan thing there, we mentioned when the Games Workshop main site competition closes, the Titan competition runs between the 4th of March and the 31st of March. So again, get your orders in. In the world of video games, Battlefleet Gothic Armada has had an update thanks to Angry Joe. Angry Joe was involved in a developer preview recently. Actually, the video went up today/yesterday for us. And it's basically him going through the customization options and having a quick play of the alpha build by the looks of it. What did you think of that also? Did you get a chance to have a watch of that?
Yes, so I was actually watching this just before we started recording, so I haven't seen it all, but I skipped through. And so I like, first of all, that there's ship customization, and
definitely.
This is also kind of the first, not in-depth, but full, you know, they're not cutting in and out. This is the first full gameplay we've really seen of somebody that doesn't know what they're doing, and, or at least I haven't seen it before, and it's very interesting how they've decided to do it. Obviously, some people were complaining that, oh, you know, they basically wanted Homeworld. They wanted a full 3D map, but this is only 2D. I'm totally okay with that. I'm too old to be learning how a 3D map works. Two planes are fine for me. And I think it's very interesting how, you know, you basically get blips on your radar, and you don't know what type of ship they are or even what ship they are, if they're enemies, until you get in range of them. I think I'm very excited for the game to come out. I've already pre-ordered anyway, so I'm getting it. I'm looking forward to seeing how the different factions play, especially Eldar, because without the Necrons there, you know what, it's a tough one. I really like how the Imperial ships look. You know, they're iconic. They've got that gothic look through and through. You, as soon as you see them, you know that's 40k.
Yeah.
But kind of, if I had to choose, Eldar is the second faction for me, and I know that they have the Eldar ships, so I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
Yes, no, it should be very, 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 very interesting. Again, go and see the Angry Joe video. It's got some very interesting stuff there. Very beautiful looking ships they got in that game.
Oh yes, if I didn't say that, it looks stunning. Really love it.
Indeed. So moving on to the Imperial Data Slate. As always with the Data Slate, we start off with a quote. And today's quote, with 37 keys of Zeech, we open the way for our brothers. With the 1,000 whispers of Slaanesh, we call to them. With the 12 plagues of Nurgle, we fell their enemies. And with the mighty axe of Khorne, we cut open the world for them. Yes, we are starting to cover the Chaos Gods. Today we decided to cover Khorne, as he is probably the most prolific Chaos God in the 40k universe, given that there's slaughter and war everywhere.
It is literally everywhere, and I think the best way to think of Khorne, like, if you don't want to listen to the rest of this Imperial Data Slate, okay, go and look at Age of Sigmar and look at the first few releases they did for that. You obviously had the Stormcast Eternals, but then you also had the Chaos, the Khorne armies, and I'm pretty sure the way that the, you know, that development cycle worked is you had the game designers come along and say, so we've got this model and this is the theme, it's Khorne, and they have a whip. What should we call it? And they have this one guy that says, let's go Blood Whips. And the game designers came back and said, oh, okay, well, we've got this guy and he's got a sword. Blood Swords. And then, yeah, that was so annoying. Every single release had blood something. It was just like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Khorne is more than just blood. Like, it's murdering. I'm pretty sure there is a unit called Blood Killers or Blood Murderers. And it's like, come on, man.
There's probably a unit called the Blooded as well.
That sounds good, though, to be honest. But
it does.
But, yeah, I was a little bit annoyed by that. Because it's just a complete lack of caring about your lore. If the only word you can think of is blood.
We got this god, he's into, like, war and stuff. Is he into blood? Yeah. Cool, let's go that route.
Hey, they picked a theme and they committed. I'll give them that.
That's true.
True.
So, Khorne is the Chaos God of anger, violence, and hate. Khorne is the mightiest and the second to emerge of the four chaos gods of chaos, fully coming into existence during Terra's Middle Ages, unsurprisingly enough. Every act of violence gives Khorne power, whether committed by his followers or by their enemies. The name Khorne derives from his dark tongue name, Karneth, meaning Lord of Rage or Lord of Blood. Although Khorne despises the use of magic and accordingly hates Zeech, Slaanesh is his opposite. Khorne and Slaanesh personify two entirely opposing aspects of chaos, and Khorne considers Slaanesh a weakling without martial pride or honor. Images of Khorne show it to be a mighty being, sitting upon a great throne of brass atop a mountainous pile of bleached skulls centered in a lake of blood. It could be the cover of a metal album.
Probably some sort of Swedish death metal, yeah.
Totally. The skulls are all those slain by Khorne's champions, and of all his slain champions themselves. The mountain slowly grows ever higher, the more, obviously, people get killed. Khorne is said to have inherited a Martian nobility and honor, and considers the weak and helpless to be unworthy of his wrath. His associated number is 8, reflected in the organization of his armies, and in smaller matters, such as the number of syllables in a demonic follower's name.
Okay, so, how do you worship Khorne? Well, Khorne's followers are warriors without exception, if only in mind, then in occupation. His followers build no temples, but rather worship him on the battlefield. To devote time to building temples rather than fighting for something would more likely incur Khorne's wrath than please him. Worship of Khorne is purely through bloodshed, either from one's enemies in victory or one's own through earnest struggle. Like the struggle I just had to pronounce that word. It is said that any follower who allows a day to pass without contributing to this act of worship will incur Khorne's displeasure. The battle cry of the followers of Khorne reflects his desire for wanton violence and is feared by all who hear it. Blood for the blood god, skulls for the skull throne. Now, traditionally on a podcast, I would have shouted that, but it is about 12:45 a.m, so don't want my housemates to be pissed off at me. So, in the mythology of the primitive inhabitants of Fenris,
Gorg.
Yeah, Gorg was. It's Khorne. That's probably how they would say it, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Gorg. It could be Gorhi, but who knows? Let's go Gorg, which is presumably is a misinterpretation of Khorne. Is an evil deity described as the offspring of the dark god Horus and the dragon goddess Skrinir, and is imprisoned within one of the planet's volcanic islands after being defeated by Leman Russ.
Indeed, and the demons of Khorne include the Bloodthirsters. The greater demons of Khorne, of all the demons of Khorne, demons of Chaos, sorry, they bear the greatest resemblance to the archetypal demon, having a human body, cloven hooves, leathery bat-like wings, and horned dog heads. They wield a fiery whip and a massive two-headed battle axe, which in original background were demon weapons binding another Bloodthirster. Simultaneously, they wield those two weapons in battle. They are the strongest and most aggressive of all demons. The mightiest Bloodthirster of Khorne is Angrath, the Unbound. In the last 10,000 years, Angrath has only been summoned twice from the warp. Both successful summonings have resulted in great loss for the Imperium, as many worlds fell to his terrible wrath.
And then we have Bloodletters. They're the common demons of Khorne. They are horned humanoids with hunched, crested backs, and their limbs are wiry, but notoriously strong. They wield blood-drinking blades called Hellblades. They are also known as the Naked Slayers, the Teeth of Death, and the Horned Ones.
Indeed, we have the Flesh Hounds, the demon beasts of Khorne. They are the monstrous and ferocious, vaguely canine creatures. When I can speak properly. Notorious for their ability to track down their chosen prey. They are also known as Hunters of Blood and have claws to rend their foes apart once they catch them. They exist for the sheer thrill of the chase and the inevitable kill. By some accounts, the Flesh Hounds were loosed against cowardly warriors who killed the weak and unworthy.
And finally, we've got Juggernauts. These are the demonic steeds of Khorne, sometimes granted champions of Khorne as mounts. A huge beast made from living demonic metal, it roughly resembles a gigantic rhinoceros. These beasts are kept in pens where they tend to fight for dominance amongst themselves. However, a particularly favoured mortal or demonic champion will sometimes attempt to claim one as a mount. This is no easy task, and the smashed remnants of the unlucky ones are left smeared around the Juggernaut's pens, but a few are successful and subdue one, receiving the boon of being its master and riding it into battle. Now, just an interesting side note, Juggernauts have been around for a long, long time. However, recently, when I think it was 5th edition, when Chaos got re-released, and they got all these new, what are the Helldrakes?
Yes,
the Helldrakes, and they kind of redid the Chaos aesthetic a little bit. They actually went in the same style as the Juggernaut, as Games Workshop does. It went way overboard, went way over the top. But that's fine. So if you're ever looking at some of these new models and thinking, how did that come from that? Look to the Juggernaut. Okay. So next up, we have the Fortress of Khorne. Now the Fortress of Khorne is Khorne's realm within the war. It is a monument to fury and bloodshed and is built upon foundations of murder and conflict. This blood-soaked realm echoes constantly with Khorne's bellows and the clash of weapons. At the centre of this mighty fortress lies the Brass Citadel, where Khorne's mighty throne resides. He sits atop a mountain of skulls, those slain in his name. A great fire pit lights Khorne's gloomy chamber. The dark flames consume the souls of cowards who have fled from battle. Inside the fortress lays the foundries of Khorne, manned by souls of warriors who died in their sleep and thus forever shamed by the Blood God. Around the citadel flows a moat, and is filled not with water, but with the boiling blood of those who have lost their lives to war. Beyond this moat lies league upon league of cracked land, littered with the ravaged bones of those fallen in battle. A mighty crevasse splits the wasteland in two, a canyon many miles long and bottomless. The fortress is also said to contain pens of juggernauts and a complex of battlements equipped with great infernal cannons.
Yes, and it is said that Khorne himself was once consumed by such rage that he took up his sword and smote the ground, splitting it asunder for eternity. This fell sword is known by many names, including Warmaker and the End of All Things, and is capable of laying waste to worlds with a single blow. Wow, I want that sword in game.
Yeah, that would be pretty good, but I'm sure they'd have to nerf it into the ground, wouldn't they?
Oh, definitely, definitely. So yes, that brings us to the end of the data slate. That's the basic information on Khorne. There's a little bit more when you go into like the major followers, like the world eaters and things like that. Yes, that's about Khorne himself. We shall be going into his brothers, the other Chaos Gods, as we go forward. So that brings us to Devotions for the Faithful. Again, I've not noticed any reviews on the UK iTunes or the EU iTunes. By all means, send emails to boxofhonor@gmail.com, as you'll hear in the outro. If you have any comments or anything like that, or just want to tell us that we're doing a good job or that we're doing a bad job, or you know, whatever it is, let us know. And with that, we shall close out the show.
Actually, I have one more thing.
Go ahead.
Obviously, Games Workshop is currently, after 20 years or so of refusing to do it, spreading around its IP a little bit, especially when it comes to computer games. And one thing they've just released for iOS, Android, and on Steam is a game called Arcane Magic. Now, I was excited by this. I downloaded it onto my phone because I've been looking for a new phone to fill the gaps with. I've played Space Wolf, that's good game, but I thought, hey, I'll give this a crack. It's a similar kind of idea, however, I can't give any sort of review about it, because I got it on my phone, which was a Samsung Galaxy S6, so you know, the phone can run it. However, if anybody else is thinking about it, do not get it on your phone. It is meant to be played on at least a tablet. It's too small for a phone. It's basically unplayable. It was only £1.50, but obviously it would still only be £1.50 on a tablet. And as part from that, it may be a good game. It may not. I don't know. There you go.
Well, we may cover that in a later show. Once I've been able to have a closer look and maybe have a play, that's quite interesting. So yes, have a look at that, guys. with that said, we shall come to our thoughts for the day, which is It is the fate of the weak to die unknown, and the destiny of the strong to rule for eternity. Give me glory, or give me death. I've been Gigabyte. He has been Octa. We are Vox Arcona, and we shall see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Goodbye.
The Adeptus Terra thanks you for tuning into tonight's broadcast of Vox Arcona, a production of Holosuite Media. Be sure to check our website, iTunes, or Stitcher Satellite Radio for our remastered Voxcasts and more. You can follow us on Twitter at Vox Arcona. Or if you have any questions or comments, please send an email to voxarcona@gmail.com. Return next week for yet another communique from the Vox Arcona.